Hey, pardon me, sir. I think you have the wrong car.
You've emailed for an appointment 2 days in a row.
Tell me what's going on.
I've never seen a case like this before. 23 identities live in Kevin's body. Did something happen?
There's a flower on the pillows, a flower in the bathroom, like we're important. Who is that? Maybe she can help us.
Don't worry. He knows what you're here for. He's not allowed to touch you. He knows that.
My name's Hedwig. I have red socks.
How old are you?
9.
The human brain is the most complex object in the universe.
The only way we're getting out of here is if one of them decides to let us out.
Aren't you the clever one?
M. Night Shyamalan is back with his thriller horror, if you want to call it that, Split, starring James McAvoy, one of the most unappreciative actors of all time, if you ask me. I love him. He's in my top, probably top three, but he's in my top five of favorite actors of all time. I got to see this movie early, back in, well, not that early, I guess like second week of December or something like that. I got invited, well, I guess I can't really say the name, whatever, but it was really cool, had a good time. I was really looking forward to this film because when I saw the trailer, I said, whoa, this trailer looks incredible, dude. I was like, James McAvoy looks like he's about to kill it in this role. And then M. Night's name popped up at the end of the trailer, and I said, oh, fuck. I think the whole audience in the theater said that, actually. They was like, oh, shit. M. Night is a very polarizing figure. I think he's... although I'm not really a big fan of a lot of his movies, like I'm not that crazy as for Sixth Sense as everybody is says. I was like, that's fine, whatever. Unbreakable is fine. I think some people like Signs. I'm not even sure. I don't really give a fuck about Signs either. And I think he personally, he's made one of the worst movies of all time with Lady in the Water. That is some abysmal piece of shit right there. And even the stuff that he made in his bigger films, such as, you know, After Earth and Last Airbender, where I don't watch Last Airbender, but I know, watching that movie, I can tell, oh, he fucked this property up, you know? And After Earth was just a boring snooze fest. But last year, or, you know, the year before, actually, he came out with a little movie called The Visit. And I thought it actually did a good job in the twist there that they had. I was like, actually, you know, this is better. And then I see this movie, and I'm starting to think that he works a lot better when it comes to really low-budget, pretty much mind films and stuff like that, when it stays away from the big block. But let's go ahead and give a plot synopsis of this film, though. So, we got, like I said, James McAvoy. Well, actually, first of all, it opens up with the scene you see in the trailer. They're at this birthday party, or no, there's a field trip. And one of the girls, played by Anya Taylor, what's that girl's name? Anya Taylor Johnson, I believe. She was in The Witch and Morgan and stuff. Damn, why am I blanking on this girl's name? Yeah, Anya Taylor Joy. She plays Casey Cook in the film, and she's just looking out the window, waiting for Rye. And then, meanwhile, you got the Haley Lou Richardson, who we just saw in Edge of 17, and Jessica Sula, who plays Marcia. God, by the way, this girl is fine as fucking. But I looked her up, too, so I was like, I don't know about this. She look a little young and stuff like that. I looked her up. She's over 18. Thumbs up on that. Actually, they all are, but I don't really care about Anya Taylor-Joy. She's kind of weird looking. Haley Lou Richardson, I think, is a really cute girl. But Jessica Sula, she took her pants off. I was like, Well, anyway, though, they're kind of telling the father, like, hey, she's kind of weird, you know. She tends to, like, get in trouble a lot and wants to go to detention more than she does home. So why don't we just leave her and let her catch an Uber or a bus or something like that? And the father's like, nah, I'm not going to leave you guys here. I'll take in. Her father is played by Neil Huff, who you see in the trailer. He's putting stuff in the trunk of the car. The girl's already in there. Next, you know it, Someone gets in the car. It's James McAvoy's character. Well, he plays lots of characters because in this movie, he has 23 personalities. Now, you don't really get to see all 23 of them. You see almost about 7 of them, though. And towards the end of the film, when they see his video vlogs of him doing each personality and stuff like that, you see all 23. He ends up spraying the girls, knocking them out, and taking them in. And he talks about this purity and stuff like that. He's pretty much having them to feed their purity to the beast. So I guess that's really the plot synopsis if you don't want to go into more detail of the actual story, which I will do when I get into my what I like and didn't like about the film. And that's pretty much the plot synopsis here. You know, he holds these three girls captive till the beast is warned enough to show up to feed on their pure souls, if you will, or something like that, because they play high school teenagers in this film. It gets a little, I ain't gonna lie, it gets a little out there. I gotta say, getting to the plot synopsis, out of the plot synopsis, I'm intrigued by this film a lot. I gotta say, for those who, you know, January's dumping ground, I'm gonna go ahead and put this out here. I think M. Night Shyamalan made possibly one of, maybe, I'm not gonna throw that out there yet because the year just started and we haven't seen anything yet. But he probably made one of the most creative films of the year. It is a little sloppy and stuff like that in some terms, especially in the beginning. But I think the thought-provoking behind it, it's something unique and something to be observed in a way. First thing I want to get off my chest here. James McAvoy. I just said at the opening of this review, this guy is in my top 5 favorite actors. I think he kills it. Fuck Patrick Stewart, okay? This is Xavier and stuff like that. You know why? Because he actually does shit, okay? He don't just sit there in a fucking chair and throw his hand out or touch his fucking head every now and then or something like that. But this dude, obviously, he is the best part of X-Men. Without a doubt. He is the best part. If it's not him, then it's Magneto or whatever. You take him away, I really don't give a fuck then, to be honest. But I always knew this guy, even in films I don't really care for that much, when I seen him in it, I was like, this guy stands out for some reason. I remember back in the day, like 2008, I used to see some of his older films and stuff. They were like really small British independent films and stuff. And I was like, man, this guy is really good. I remember sitting in an Atlanta hotel one time watching one of his old British independent films and stuff. And watching him in this movie, man, he really does transform himself. It's a 2-4 performance here, I gotta say. He transforms himself into these characters who seem sometimes creepy, who can seem somewhat innocent, but towards the end of it, it's almost you fear of each one of them in a certain sense, because each one of them has, even though they're different. And in this movie, I gotta say, it takes some bold-ass predictions, because I don't really think it handles split personality mental health disorder well in that sense. And I don't really know how people who has split personality, if they would even watch this, first of all, but how they would take this film. But I think it throws some intriguing ideas out of there to add a certain sci-fi element to it, where, you know, you have the doctor in here who's played by Betty Buckley. She plays Dr. Karen Fletcher in the film, and she gives these speeches, you know, these talks about how certain individuals' personalities, they can change their body. It's almost like they're totally becoming this person who their mind is making them believe. They're like, one of his characters in the film has diabetes. And that shit threw me off like a motherfucker. I love it too, because he's yelling. He's just like, they say that we're all the same person, right? Then how come I'm the only fucking one that has to take this damn needle and stuff like that? And you know, one of them truly believes it's a woman. One of them believes it's a 9-year-old kid, and he plays the fucking 9-year-old well. And I think what he does so well too in this film is M. Night Shyamalan, what he does, because he is the writer and director in this film, the one thing he does so perfectly on this film is I think he adds a really good balance of creepy humor. Like, there's moments in here where you're laughing at the film, but then you, it's kind of that slow fade away laugh, like ha 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 ha, ha. Oh shit. And I think that's really a good thing about the film too, is because, you know, films No, a lot of people probably know, but films should do this, especially when it's a thriller. That's why I love thriller. That's why it's my favorite genre, is because thriller adds so much of a mystery involved to it. It adds so much different genres, mixtures into it and stuff. Like, I hear people calling this a horror film. I don't really think it's a fucking horror film. This is, without a doubt, a straight-up thriller sci-fi film to me in every sense of the word here. Let me go ahead and split off my negatives, though. My negatives is, though, first of all, the two girls I talked about, Haley Richardson and Jessica Sulu, they're fucking awful. They are fucking awful. Like, I mean, without every sense, they are just terrible. I hear some people out there saying, oh, everybody's really good in this film. No, not these two. They fucking suck. They are pointless, and they don't really even need to be there. The only reason why they're there is for, towards the end of the film, the beast to feed on. I even like saying that now, the beast. This thanks to James Mack, the beast. The beast. The beast. But they're just there for the beast of... Claire Benoit. Ah, Benoit, huh? That's your last name. Ah, M. Night testing the waters out there then, I see. Other than what these girls were made of, they were annoying and whiny. And I love that Anya Taylor-Joy here was to call him out on her bullshit. Haley Richardson, she's like freaking out. She's like... We should just jump him. I took 6 months of karate at the mall or whatever, and I think that if we all take... And I like Haley Richardson says, yeah, your 6 months of karate is going to get your ass knocked out. That dude manhandled the three of us at the same time. Could you imagine if he just knocks one of us out? We're dead then or whatever. So what would be the point here? There's even a scene, too, where, you know, they're trying to block the door to let Haley Lou Richardson's character climb up the ceiling, and she's like panicking and freaking out. There's even a scene too in here where she kind of gets away, but she's hiding in a locker. But oh my god, the chick is like breathing, and it's just like, okay, you do know the shit echoes in the locker. Of course he's gonna fucking catch your ass. I mean, there's no without a doubt. Like, I just thought they were just so fucking annoying. I was just like, your death to the beast would bring so much great. I would love to assist the beast, because clearly I'm not fucking pure. I mean, I can tell you that right now. I'm not pure at all. Now, he doesn't necessarily say it has to be pure, like all throughout the film and something like, or that there's sacrifices to the beast or any stuff like. You kind of pick this up as the movie goes along, and especially when it gets towards the end of the film, why he does what he feels he needs to do with Anya Taylor-Joy's character too as well. Another thing I don't like besides these two girls. The opening was a little, okay, let's get it. I mean, don't get me wrong, it gets right into it, you know. I mean, like, the whole kidnapping thing, it gets right into it. But there's a lot of flashback sequences. And at first, they really feel pointless, or you're kind of like, where the fuck is this going, to be honest? I don't care about this. I want to get back to that. I want to watch James McAvoy and stuff. And they do a lot of it. It goes back and forth. And mainly, it's showing Anya Taylor-Joy as a young girl who's... Oh man, I forgot. Oh, Izzy Coffey, and she's 5 years old. As a 5-year-old, she's with her, what's the name? Their dad and her uncle, and they're constantly teaching her about hunting and how hunting is a thing. Well, I guess to go ahead get into that. I didn't really like that much. The longer it went on, I remember saying, okay, they're still showing this. There must be something to this story that relates to this story. And it kind of does in a way or whatever, but I don't really think that the flashbacks were all that great. It's shocking as hell when it gets to the end and stuff like that, and it reveals some things about Anya Taylor-Joy's character, but I really think that part kind of slowed the movie down. I don't know if they just wasn't integrated well, or maybe they were edited wrong or something like that, or maybe they could have, I don't know, kind of incorporated it in ways like, instead of just like popping up out of nowhere, maybe they could have been dreams that she had where she's having flashbacks, like kind of like, even though I didn't really care for the movie, that A Monster Calls, where he's kind of dreaming of his nightmare of what he can't do with his mom. Maybe if they would have did it that way instead of just popping up, then maybe I could have been fine with it. But basically, these flashback sequences lead to her father, her uncle raping her. There's a scene where he kind of grabs her out of the... Well, he didn't grab, he tricks her out, and he says, let's play animals, you know? You remember, we got to play animals. He's like, but animals don't play with clothes on. Come on, take your clothes off. And he constantly, even still to this day, he rapes her and stuff like that. it was a shocking turn of events, especially because she pulls a gun on his ass at 5 years old, but she doesn't pull the trigger back. She starts crying. Next, you know, we fast forward to another flashback sequence where her father dies. The uncle gets, and this is how he continues to rape her and stuff like that. He gets full custody of her now because that's the only guardian that she has. Excuse me. And even fast forward now to the high school girl she is, she gets raped and abused or whatever. That's why she doesn't want to go home. That's why she's constantly staying in detention, is because, you know, she feels safer there and stuff. So that's mainly what those flashback sequences are. And that's what I mean by pure when it comes to the end of the film. When you get to it, James McAvoy, the Beast, he sees the marks on her, the marks and scars, and he looks at her and says, you're unpure. You know, you're, in a way, you're kind of like me. You know, you're not like the other girls at all. You're unpure and stuff like that. And he lets her live and stuff. So... and that's where that whole point is getting to. But to get into, I'm trying to think. Another thing I didn't like, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, I don't know if I won't say it. I didn't like. It's not a twist. It's kind of a, how do I fucking put this? I wasn't trying to get into this early in the review, but I'm gonna go ahead and get into it. The ending of the film. It ain't a twist. At least I don't see it as a twist and stuff like that. I mean, this is just story addition here. But fucking M. Night Shyamalan just created a universe. That's right, people. Like Marvel or what DC's trying to fucking do, the monster universe, M. Night Shyamalan just created a universe in his own damn films. And to put it out there, it's Unbreakable. People, you remember Unbreakable? That little superhero film, in a kind of, in a way, quasi-superhero film of Bruce Willis, Samuel Jackson, Mr. Glass, if you will. The movie wraps up with them in a diner, and the news is on talking about it's looking for this murderer, this monster, who had this many personalities and stuff like that. And then you see these two women at the diner table. They're blocking the man sitting there, and they go... Wow, this reminds me of that story of all those incidents that happened. The man that lost, that was paralyzed in the arms and the waist below and stuff like that. What was his name? And then the girls leaned back and it looked like Bruce. I couldn't tell for a second. I was like, is that Bruce Willis? And then you hear him say, his name was Mr. Glass. And then the movie cuts off. Now, first of all, I heard some music before this scene kicked in. I remember Unbreakable. Parts of it very well, actually, and stuff like that. I don't remember the full movie, but I remember a lot of parts of it very fucking well. I remember the trailer. I remember the ending. I remember how it really ended and stuff like that. And I remember the score in it, because I thought it had a really good score to go to it. And I thought this movie had a really good score, too. But he plays that score from Unbreakable in this film to where it leads up to that diner. And you hear it, and you go, like... You don't really think much of it, too, but then... And then you just, like... At first, I was just thinking... Oh, this dude is recycling his own fucking material. Oh, okay, all right. But then I started to see that, and I was like... my mouth kind of opened a little bit, and I was just like, no fucking... okay. What? What? Are you fucking kidding me? It blew my mind for a second. As you can hear, I'm stuttering right now, because I'm just like... The first thing to come out of my mouth, I sat there, I was like... Did M. Night just create a fucking universe right now? And why I say this could possibly be a negative, it isn't for me, but I think the negative of that is Unbreakable came out in 2000? What was it, 2001 or something like that? Nobody that's going to go see this film, unless you're either a movie reviewer, a film critic, or a really hardcore movie buff or whatever, or you're just a hardcore M. Night Shyamalan fan... You're just not going to get that at all or whatever. It's going to get lost to you. But for us to know it, you're going to be like, oh my God, what the hell? So it's kind of a quasi-flaw. Well, you know, here, I'll take that back. It is a flaw. Because I don't think you can go back on films that you made fucking almost 2 decades ago and then sit up here and just expect people to get it. It's almost as if, like, You're making... Now, granted, I'm not saying he's going to make an Unbreakable, possibly a third one or whatever, because you can consider this through, or he's going to create this universe. Maybe it was just a cool little, hey, throw this in here to connect with my other film or something like that, make it seem even cooler. I don't know if he's actually going to do that. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. Personally, I don't think he should. it's a little out of his wheelhouse when he gets start thinking bigger and stuff like that. He's like, oh, don't do it. You just stick to these little films here. But I think it's kind of a flaw, too, in the sense that you're as a director and a creator, you're expecting audience to come in here to know what that is. And I hate to tell you this, M. Night, a lot of people don't like your ass, nor do they like your movies. So that's kind of a pain in the ass. That's kind of like throwing something in a Marvel film right now and then expecting people to... Well, I get that. Honestly, never mind, though. But those films all make almost damn near a fucking $1 billion. So a lot of people see those fucking films. But it's kind of like saying... Okay, that's like saying they never introduced any of the Infinity Stones. And then Guardians of the Galaxy 2 says, hey, we got 5 Infinity Stones already, you know? We got the Infinity Stones, and it's just like, where the fuck is the build-up to that? Okay, or basically saying, like, you know, Bucky with Captain America, you know, for Civil War. It's throwing in that relationship. If you've never even seen Captain America First Avenger, you know, how could you know Bucky is his best friend and stuff like that? But that's basically based on the amount that if Bucky wasn't in the film as much and stuff like that. I'm going on a whole different tangent here and stuff like that. I didn't mind it because I understood the reference and stuff, but I'm almost aware that half of the audience, if not more, are going to be like, what is that? Is that Bruce Willis? What's going on here? And stuff like that. So, yes, this is a tie-in to Unbreakable. Now, remember in the end of Unbreakable 2, which you probably don't remember because it wasn't that great of a film, but Samuel Jackson says, you know, his purpose of doing what he did in that film was so he could find Bruce Willis, because you can't have a superhero without the villain. And he mainly said, you know, the superhero is the complete opposite of what you are. You know, he is the indestructible force and stuff like that, which was Bruce Willis's character. You know, he's really strong and indestructible. But now that kind of, it had me thinking, though, because in here, the Beast is indestructible. He's really strong. He can do things that Bruce Willis was kind of doing. So, in a way, he's not the complete opposite. But in this movie, in a sense, though, it feels like it created a supervillain for Bruce Willis. But it's weird because it doesn't follow the format of what M. Night set up in Unbreakable, is saying, you know, you got to be the complete opposite of what it is. But I guess maybe he is the complete opposite, because instead of, you know, his Bruce Willis character, this guy's an animal. You know, he's animalistic. He doesn't control his strength and stuff like that. It just comes and takes over who he is and stuff. And the thing about, like, I think the best comparison you can give this to is 10 Cloverfield Lane. Now, while I do agree 10 Cloverfield Lane is a better film, except for part of that fucking ending, I think the ending is awful. And even though I know that ending sets up the pieces in there and stuff like that, the ending still just kind of baffles me how that comes on. I feel this film is not as a better film. It's not a better film than 10 Cloverfield Lane. But I think it is more of an intriguing one. I think it's more interesting. It has a lot more questions. It has a lot more detail added to the film and stuff, to where I think it makes it more interesting than 10 Cloverfield Lane. And probably, if not mistaken, it might be more memorable in a way, because it does things that 10 Cloverfield Lane doesn't do. It goes off the rail just a little bit. But where it goes off the rail, it kind of comes into a full circle nonetheless, or whatever, because the same thing happens with James McAvoy's character. He plays a character named Kevin. Kevin is the main host. Kevin Wendell Crumb is the name of the main host, is by which you don't get to talk to, but these other personalities came and took over his body, because they show you a really quick scene of how his mother was abusing him. He used to hide under the beds, and she used to grab coat hangers to hook his skin, to hook him out from under the bed. So she was beating him and abusing him and possibly molesting him too at sometimes, whatever and stuff. So he created these other personalities to, in a way, protect him. Dennis and Patricia, which is Dennis is the one you see with the glasses, and Patricia is the one as the woman in the hills and stuff like that. They're the leaders, if you will, to control all the other ones, to pretty much prove that how strong he is, you know, to protect him. They're not afraid to do things and stuff. Hedwig is the 9-year-old, which was pretty damn funny, I'm not gonna lie. I got some good laughs out of that and stuff like that too, especially because he's Hedwig and she wakes up. I ain't tell Joy wakes up and she sees the door open, because he leaves the door open, he's a child, and he's sleeping next to her, and he's just like,
I really like Kanye West music. He's my favorite musician. Because sometimes I'd be in my room by the window, and I'm in there dancing, you know, I'm grooving. And he's, like, bobbing his head back and forth, whatever and stuff. It was funny as fuck, whatever and stuff. And she's like, there's a window in your room? And he's like, yeah, there's a good window in there, or whatever. He's like, are you trying to trick me? I don't think you should be in my room, whatever. Can I have a kiss? He has the mind of a fucking 9-year-old. Like, his mind is all over the place. He jumps from one place to another. James McAvoy is fucking phenomenal in his performance or whatever. And I love the scene, too, where he takes her to his room. He's like, come on, let's go. I love how he even walks with Hedwig, how he uses his knee. He's like a child in my sense and stuff. And he takes him, and she's like, I thought that there would be a window in here. And he was just like, there is a window. And it's a drawing of a window. And he's like, see? Window closed. And he lifts the paper up and he says, window open. Window closed. Window open. But I love when that scene, those two got into a fight, Dennis takes over. He takes over because he's the strong one. He's going to protect the other personalities and stuff like that. So I think that even though it doesn't handle it really well, this mental... multiple personality disfigure. I don't think it handles that in the sense of it's not coming from a place where it's trying to be scientifically right or anything like that. It's coming from a place where it's trying to make a sci-fi thriller film out of it. But so I don't really know how people with that multiple personality, how they would feel about something like this. But I do see the sense of where it comes from and how it fits for this story. And I just found that to be really intriguing, especially with the whole body elements changing. So basically, the doctor ends up getting killed. He kills her because he transforms into the beast. Now, another unbreakable thing, too, in here, this was really, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit off or anything like that, but everybody, you remember the train sequence in Unbreakable? Samuel Jackson killed people on a train. I mean, he damn near crashed the whole damn train. I'm willing to bet James McAvoy's character, this is a theory of mine or whatever and stuff, James McAvoy's mother was on that train. I think she was on that train. Now, there's a scene in this film before he becomes the beast. He goes and gets flowers, and then he leaves flowers on the train. Or at least on by the train stand. Apparently, that's what he does. And then he got on the train, because it's out of service right now, whatever. It's done. He gets on the train, takes clothes off, turns into the beast. Like his whole body shapes and forms and stuff like that. And then he runs. I mean, this motherfucker was like a goddamn triathlon or something. He just runs. He zooms and he goes back. And I said, well, at least he became the beast outside of this place with these three girls locked up. Oh. He just wanted to leave them. Oh, he's coming back. Oh, y'all need to get the fuck out of this place. Joy's character ends up getting out. She opens the other doors and she sees what's her name? Jessica Sulu's character. She's killed. She's sitting there, and then he knocks on Haley Lou Richardson's door. He opens it and she moves. She's alive, and her body just gets dragged back. She goes, oh my fucking God, whatever. She walks in a little bit and she sees the beast eating her. I threw another theory out there, too. It's like maybe the beast eats people. That's how he's able to transform. This is part of the sci-fi element where he's able to transform his molecular body. It doesn't make any damn sense at all, whatever, but it's sci-fi flow with it and stuff like that. And plus, so maybe that's how he's able to transform because they make him look taller. They make him muscular. He's almost damn near like a mutant when you see the veins going through his body and stuff like that. Or whatever. And I was just like, this dude looks freaky. They don't show his face. They only show the bottom part of it. You know, every now and then they'll show the top part of his head. They never match up. So they did some configuration with the body here. Unless that was just, it was another actor playing that, portraying that part and stuff like that. M. Night Shyamalan, of course, he makes his fucking shitty ass cameo in here. And it serves no fucking purpose. I'm not gonna lie, it serves no fucking purpose at all. So he ends up killing his doctor. But then, you know, Anya Taylor-Joy, who says his name, which has, like, power over him. It brings him back or whatever. She calls his name and he turns on. He's like, what's going on? Who are you? What's happening? And stuff like this.
He doesn't know anything that's happened. He remembers, it's set in present day time in this film, and he said the last thing I remember was sitting on a train in September 2014. And she said, it's not that date. And she said, uh-uh. And he says, oh my God. He says, there's a shotgun in that drawer and there's shells in my locker. I need you to put a bullet through me right now. And I was like, holy shit. And then next thing you know, these other personalities, they started slowly taking over again. They were like, no, you don't need to kill him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And then each one started coming out until Dennis came back. And then the beast came. He said, Kevin's sleeping now. We locked him far, far away. We're saying his name ain't going to bring him back. Uh-uh. No, 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 no. The beast is coming. And he needs to complete. Because he's going to change the whole human civilization of how they look upon people and stuff like that. It was some creepy shit. It was getting even creepier. And then when the beast comes out and she's running. This shit was this is probably some of the scariest shit I've ever seen. The way he's climbing on walls and shit like that. And she runs through herself through a dead end with the shotgun. And he's climbing the wall, knocking the lights out. As it gets darker down his tunnel. And I was just like, holy shit, I'm terrified now. I ain't gonna lie, I was scared as fuck, whatever. I was just like, you need to take that shotgun, spin it around, blow your fucking brains out. And I know a lot of people are thinking like, just shoot his ass, shoot him. He's moving like goddamn Quicksilver through these fucking tunnels and stuff. He's moving too damn quick to shoot his ass. And she does shoot him twice, close blank. He still gets up. He gets up. And he's just like, oh shit. This motherfucker's invincible. He's a goddamn metahuman now, whatever. He takes the chain, the cage, whatever. He bends the damn bars back, whatever. And this is the part where he sees the scars on her because she doesn't have any clothes on. He has a major OCD. He's got to take people's clothes off and shit to clean them. He's like, you got dirt on. I need to clean it and stuff like that. He sees the scars on her and how she was abused or whatever. And he calls her, you know, the whole impure thing. Then he runs out and leaves. Only to come to find out she still sits there and some dude finds her. James McAvoy's gone. There's a dude here. He comes on. And I remember going, what the fuck? Okay, hell no. But then to come about it, it's at Kevin's workplace that the doctor talks about so much. It's in the fucking tunnels and stuff that are the workplace. He works at a zoo. And that's where this is and stuff. And she starts walking by all the animals and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, this makes perfect sense now. Oh, shit. And then, you know, we cut to a scene with her in the car and you know, her uncle comes get her and she's like, your guardian, your uncle's here. Come out the car. And she just kind of looks at the camera and the camera goes off. And it shows Kevin or all these other personalities, James McAvoy's character. He's in his room. He's looking at the bullet wounds and he's going like, wow. He's playing Hedwig right now. He's like, this is so fucking cool right now. He said, I feel no pain. And Dennis is saying, the beast is showing us how much of evolved of a human being we were becoming. And just like, okay, this is getting some next level shit right here. And then the next scene goes into the whole Bruce Willis scene in Unbreakable. The movie cuts off. I gotta say, I don't think this movie, I think it does some good things. I really think, though, that part where the beast comes in, it might throw some people off. Kind of like the way the ending of 10th Cloverfield Lane threw some people off. Didn't throw me off. For me, that felt more kind of natural, especially because we seen the trailer. We kind of saw this was going to happen. So we knew that. I knew he was going to be the beast. I just assumed that it was going to be something even more frightening. Or whatever. I thought it was going to be like a whole other creature or something like that or whatever and stuff like that. But it wasn't because we seen the trailer. What the fuck was that, by the way? Okay, something freaking me out now. I'm getting nervous talking about this goddamn beast shit or whatever. And James McAvoy's creepy ass. That motherfucker is creepy. The only person I think that could have did this role who's creepy looking or whatever is Jake Gyllenhaal. I think something like this, he would have succeeded in this fucking film too, to be honest. These are creepy looking motherfuckers, okay? But this film, for me at least, I think it does a damn good job. There's some things in there I don't really like or whatever. I think 10 Cloverfield Lane is a better film. And make that comparison because they're kind of somewhat similar in a way. But I think this one's the more intriguing one. Actually, this might be my favorite M. Night film, to be honest. I don't think I've ever given one any of his films the rating I'm going to give. But I think it's just so unique and creative. And the James McAvoy, with his performance in here, he kills it. He nails it on such another level here. The addition, adding on to a different one of his older films, I think is
fantastic in a sense if you've seen his shitty ass films back in the day. I think the whole thing about, you know, the purity, superheroes and all that stuff, I think it's really good. I don't think it's handled in the best light, but as far as like trying to be something like Room or anything like that, but this film knows it's not trying to be that. I do think there will be some, I think this will be a divisive film. I think some people are going to like that first half and go like, oh, this is cool, whatever, you know. And then the second half, it might throw them off a little bit. I think some people might love the second half, first half, and then go like, the second half, whatever, it's just whatever. But for me, I think it works. I enjoyed this film a lot. I'm going to drop a low seed on this film. Drop a low seed on it, not again. I'm going to get that full seed because those other two characters in here, I thought they were fucking sucked ass. I wasn't a fan of the flashbacks as much in the beginning of the film. And I really do think, even though I know the unbreakable part, a lot of people aren't going to get that. So that could be a flaw in its own sense in the matter itself here. But I think it's really a fucking unique film. I think even if I know people, if I know people that aren't going to like it, I would tell them to watch it anyway, just to see what you think about it, because it is one of those films that raise conversations or whatever. And those are the best type of films, you know, that raise any kind of conversation. So I'm going to drop a low seed on this film. And I never thought I would do that for any M. Night Shyamalan film, especially after the pieces of shit he made. But, man, James McAvoy. Wow.
Hedwig, could you help us?
Okay. I have a window in my room.
Maybe you could show us.
Oh, that's here. Now it's closed. Now it's open.
Did you think it was a room in there?
So you could leave?
An individual with multiple personalities can change their body chemistry with their thoughts.
Someone's coming for you. What will happen when he unlocks the potential of his brain?
There is no limit to what he can become.
Tonight is a sacred night. You will be in the presence of something greater. The world will understand now. The beast is real.